From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, controversial nominees before the Senate. Woke social justice warriors get cozy with a pro-slavery country, and the state of Mississippi takes a stand for women. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Reagan Republican, and Christ follower. Earlier this week, some very controversial deputy secretary nominees were before the Senate and joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about the nominees, as well as his anti-slavery bill, is Senator Marco Rubio of Florida.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back on.
Well, you outline in an op-ed your concern, the problems that you see with Sherman filling this high-level post in the Biden administration. What are the biggest red flags for you?
Well, I think you've highlighted some of them already, which is her previous service. But she's also, you know, listen, she's a political operative who has served in diplomatic posts, but her political operative background comes into play. You see it become apparent in her service in the past, as, for example, the Iran deal, and as well as she was a sort of full-blown advocate for the old notion that somehow we should be doing more with China. You know, she said in an op-ed piece that she wrote last summer, she viciously attacked the Trump administration on a host of issues, Cuba, Venezuela, which, by the way, in the hearing, she couldn't point out to what disagreements she had with those policies. But in the case of China, she says, well, we should be looking for ways to work with them on deals on things like climate change. China is the world's greatest polluter. I mean, last year alone, they built a historic number of coal plants, not to mention, you know, financing them all over the world. And they've never signed a deal they've ever kept in the, or not sort of walked away from and undermined. So there's a host of reasons, but I think that it all tracks back to one thing, and this is a liberal political operative operating inside of the State Department.
Well, one of the things that drew my attention in your op-ed was to the fact that she was one of the first directors of Emily's List, which is the most aggressive when it comes to electing individuals who have, an orthodox view of the left's policy on abortion. And the State Department has a history up until this last administration to exporting this liberal view of abortion, in fact, forcing it on other states when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, and by the way, when we talk about forcing it, it's conditioning funding on its availability and or the direct fund, the funding of it by getting rid of the Mexico City policy now that opens the door to that. Always, of course, under, you know, couched as reproductive services and women's health issues. But in fact, it's nothing but an effort to, as I said, you know, promote and fund the performing abortions in other countries. And in many cases, in countries where that is still not widely accepted, they still hold traditional views on that issue.
I mean, I've talked to a number of those foreign ambassadors. I'm sure you've talked to more of them, especially during the Barack Obama years, whose arms were twisted, that they had to change their laws on abortion and even on marriage. They were forcing them to change their view of human sexuality as a condition for foreign aid from the United States.
Well, and that's the, again, that's the exporting the cultural and social agenda of one part of the country on the rest of the world as part of our foreign policy, which at the core, our foreign policy is about protecting America's national interest, our national security, our alliances that contribute to our national security, and hopefully as well to the stability of countries so you don't have migratory crisis, and you don't have wars, and you don't have the rise of terrorism. And that's the point of global diplomacy, not to take, you know, the political viewpoints of domestic policies and then superimpose them upon other cultures and countries. Now, you know, democracy, that's a unifying principle. We can't impose democracy. We're supportive of it. But these are cultural issues that go right to the heart of the values of any country. We shouldn't be imposing those sorts of things.
We've seen one of the president's nominees, Neera Tanden, had to withdraw. Is there a chance we might see another one like Sherman have to withdraw because of the controversy surrounding her?
Well, unfortunately, I think the controversy is over issues that I don't think any Democrat's going to break on, and that's unfortunate. You know, honestly, I mean, I don't like the things that Nira Tandon put out there, but I think her nomination in terms of danger to the country is far, if you told me, you know, one nominee was going to run into problems, I would have rather had that been, for example, this individual who's going to head the Department of Health and Human Services, who has no background in health and human services, but does have a background as a woke social cultural warrior who has gone after religious entities like hospitals looking to religiously based hospitals looking to merge, you know, fighting against the federal government on the Little Sisters of the Poor and those sorts of things. I'm very concerned about the power that agency has over so much of our lives. So I wish it had been that nomination instead.
Yeah, Javier Becerra. In fact, Senator, when you just passed, you didn't, but the Senate approved a $1.9 trillion relief bill to address the COVID-19. And we're told we're in such dire straits, we need this. But yet this administration advancing an individual to head up our top health organization that doesn't have a lick of experience when it comes to health care.
No. But the power of that agency is extraordinary. So he was the Attorney General of California, and he fully utilized that office to fight the culture war. And I think we can anticipate the same. And it's unfortunate because faith-based organizations provide extraordinary contribution in our country to our healthcare systems. You know, the first hospitals in the world were faith-based. And to this day in America, faith-based organizations provide community care, oftentimes to those who are the most vulnerable, the uninsured, the poor, and others. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be concerned about there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you've mentioned a lot about China. I want to shift to the issue of China because you've been leading for some time a bipartisan effort to address the forced labor issue in China with the Uyghur Muslims, where they are being interned into these, you know, labor camps, concentration camps, and forced into labor to do labor without compensation. You have that bill has been reintroduced in this Congress, has it not?
It has, and you know, it's unfortunate that we've got these corporations in America who are quietly but vociferous but aggressively lobbying to keep it from happening. And you wonder why. They all claim they don't use forced labor, and yet that you wonder whether at least some of their supply chain is linked to it as a result of it. I suspect the answer is probably yes, which is why they don't want the liability that comes with it. Look, it's a horrifying human rights violation of men and women who are not just being forced, bad enough as it is that they're being forced into these camps to do labor. They're not just labor camps. They are designed to strip them of their religious and cultural identity.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I mean, we've seen the BBC recent reports of mass rapes, just the things that are happening there. But I want to zero in on something. You brought something up that I don't want people to miss, and that was the role of U.S. business. Chamber of Commerce actually opposed the last version of this bill coming out. I was shocked that they would be so brazen as to oppose it. But China's most favored nation status was made permanent 20 years ago. And one of the arguments was that opening trade with China would allow America to export not only our products, but our values. And that was supposed to transform China into a nation that respected human rights. But now, 20 years later, it appears the U.S. is not only running a trade deficit with China, but a values deficit as well. China has impacted our business, our Fortune 500 companies, more than we've impacted them.
Well, it's worse than that, too. I mean, in addition, that's exactly right. They deputize companies. You know, the price of doing business in China, the price of having access to their market is to come back to Washington and lobby policymakers in favor of their preferred policies. But it's also our movies. I mean, our movies, our entertainment is now being censored so that the content, you can't, so that it can play in Chinese theaters because it's such a huge market. So it's infiltrated our universities. In many cases, who have silenced speakers on campus critical of China in order to not lose their multi-million-dollar partnerships over there.
And those same entities, Hollywood, these Fortune 500 companies, are lecturing us about social justice.
Yeah, look, unfortunately, you have the rise in America of an unelected oligarchy in academia, in entertainment, in media, and in corporate America. And every answer they have to every problem is about perpetuating that power and that wealth that they've created. But every time, every answer to every problem is something that's bad for working Americans. You name it, from climate change to social justice. It's something that either goes against the common sense, wisdom, or the working class values of working Americans.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Senator Marco Rubio, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be tracking the Forced Labor Prevention Act, hopefully as it makes its way through the process.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Marco Rubio, as well as information on the religious persecution of the Uyghur Muslims in China, when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, Senator Rand Paul joins us with more from the Senate confirmation hearings.
After the recent wave of media censorship, are you struggling to find a conservative, relevant, and Christian platform where you can find out what's really going on? Here at Family Research Council, we believe that Americans have a right to exercise their freedom of speech and share their stories with the world. If you're ready to hear the facts that the left doesn't want you to know about, then head over to frcblog.com to check out our latest blog posts. We cover a wide range of issues you and your family care about, all written by our policy, government affairs, and biblical worldview experts. We discuss topics that other media platforms won't, like changes in pro-life policy, current events that affect Christians internationally, sexuality from a biblical perspective, and insights into the bigger picture of the shift in American culture. To stay up to date on current news related to faith, family, and freedom, visit frcblog.com. That's frcblog.com. What is Roe v. Wade and what did it do? The Supreme Court's 1973 decision ruled that abortion is protected under the U.S. Constitution, striking down many state abortion restrictions and severely limiting the extent to which states could write their own abortion laws. The Supreme Court's limitations on states to legislate abortion restrictions depends on the trimester of a pregnancy. For instance, Roe disallows states from restricting abortions in the first trimester, but allows some restrictions on abortions in the third trimester. What Roe doesn't do is require states to have any restrictions. Abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy is the default, unless Congress or the individual states pass laws restricting it. That leaves a lot of room for unrestricted abortions. For a full explanation of how Roe v. Wade liberalized abortion laws, go to frc.org/explainer. That's frc.org/explainer.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As we talked about in our previous segment, there are some very controversial and unqualified nominees to hold positions at the highest level of government. One of those nominees is Rachel Levine, who is a man pretending to be a woman and has been nominated to be Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about the nominee is Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky.
Senator, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Well, first, I want to commend you for asking, I think, a very important question, asking it very directly. And, of course, the outcome was predictable. Levine avoided answering your question, repeating like a robot the same answer over and over. But also predictable was the press, saying that you engaged in this transphobia when you were simply asking a very straightforward policy question. Did you ever get an answer post-hearing?
No answer whatsoever. And what's amazing about being labeled as a hater is I never even mentioned Levine or the surgery and things that she's done to herself. I never mentioned that at all. I just asked whether a minor, whether a 10-year-old could override their parental consent. So your parents say, you're 10 years old and you're not going to do this. And then the 10-year-old says, no, I am. And then the government would adjudicate that as the minor having the right to overrule their parents. I think that's horrendous to imagine that. People also need to realize what's going on in these clinics. 10% of the kids are between the ages of 3 and 10. And when they go in, see, these people have changed the language. It's Orwellian. They say they're affirming the child's identity. What they do is, if the child is confused and says this, four or five people will come up to them and say, oh, we love you, and you know, we really, you're so strong and you're so brave, and it's a great decision. But no one's telling them the opposite. The people who work in these clinics are often people who've undergone these surgeries or done these things to themselves. It's one opinion that they're hearing, and then their parents would be overruled. I just can't imagine anybody, and I think there's actually more people in our country, mainstream people, who actually some of them vote independent and Democrat, that would be horrified to think that a 10-year-old would be sort of goaded into these and groomed into these decisions. I don't know. I think her Levine's answer is so far out the mainstream that I want people to hear about it, but instead they label me a hater to try to not have anybody pay attention to the real argument.
So, Senator Paul, you're also a doctor. So let me ask you a medical question. In what other category do we allow young people, and I'm going to say 10 years old, to make medical decisions, life-altering decisions, without input from their parents?
Almost zero, but I would say that the one area where they've pushed this, and where we've had this debate before, is with minors and abortion.
Right.
That they want the minor to be able to make a decision, their parents not to know that they're having this horrific thing done, you know, a 15, 16-year-old girl, but not only that for the child is it a horrific thing, but also it's a major surgery that the 15-year-old's undergoing without their parental consent. In that area, they've been in it. But in traditional medicine, I worked as an ER doctor for several years. If your child came in and had a cut on their finger and you weren't with them and a neighbor brought them in, we would say, well, we're going to clean it up and we're going to wait till mom and dad get here. We wouldn't do anything. Even the minor scratch or bruises, we would never do it, because they need the advocate. They need their parent to be there. And see, medicine's kind of funny. You might have fallen off your bike and have a bruise on your stomach, and the kid could say they're really sore, but it could be a ruptured spleen, and they could die, and you have to do life-threatening surgery. But almost unless something's acute, you're always asking the parents. The parents are always involved with it, even if it's by phone, if they can't get there for an emergency. But that's all turned on its head, because these people aren't talking about science or medicine. They're talking about, a political extremist philosophy that they want to push on kids and push on society. But it's really not medicine per se.
So it's the political carve-outs for abortion and these transgender procedures that, as you say, have nothing to do with health care, but have more to do with advancing an agenda. Now, you also have brought up the issue of sports, of women's sports, and what this whole agenda would do to women's sports.
Yeah, this one really rubs me wrong. And also, my wife as well, she wrote something recently that was published about the two boys that are running in the girls' track meet. So when the guy that Biden has appointed to be head of education was the head of Connecticut, I asked him, because it's like, my goodness, do you think it's really fair to have boys running in the girls' track meet? They win all the medals. They stand about a foot taller, and nobody thinks that's fair. And I actually think that there are people that are going to eventually, you know, leave people. You know, Biden says, oh, he's Main Street Joe, he's middle class Joe, you know, working class values. Well, these aren't working class values. These are bizarre, extreme things. Then most people, look, a lot of people who are moderate or even liberal have girls that run track or swimming that don't think it would be fair to have boys in those sports. But it's the extreme agenda of people way, way out on the left is ruling the Democrat Party now.
Yeah, and I will quote you from what you said in committee in response to the Secretary's of Education, the nominee. Bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. And thank you, Senator Rand Paul, for joining us today, but also for speaking truth, for, not holding back.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Tony.
You can find out more about Rand Paul when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, we invite you to contact your senators and share your thoughts on the nomination of Rachel Levine and Wendy Sherman. You can find their contact info at tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with more Washington Watch right after this.
After the recent wave of media censorship, are you struggling to find a conservative, relevant, and Christian platform where you can find out what's really going on? Here at Family Research Council, we believe that Americans have a right to exercise their freedom of speech and share their stories with the world. If you're ready to hear the facts that the left doesn't want you to know about, then head over to frcblog.com to check out our latest blog posts. We cover a wide range of issues you and your family care about, all written by our policy, government affairs, and biblical worldview experts. We discuss topics that other media platforms won't, like changes in pro-life policy, current events that affect Christians internationally, sexuality from a biblical perspective, and insights into the bigger picture of the shift in American culture. To stay up to date on current news related to faith, family, and freedom, visit frcblog.com. That's frcblog.com. Every Wednesday, FRC and FRC Action President Tony Perkins hosts the Pray, Vote, Stand broadcast to equip you to pray, vote, and stand for biblical truth. This weekly half-hour program features experts, elected leaders, and Christian leaders who help you see through the fog that's being created by the biased lenses of the mainstream media. To watch the broadcasts, visit PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
Ever since the Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade in 1973, unborn children have been killed at exponential rates in America. Over 60 million people are missing from our country due to legalized abortion. Public opinion, our knowledge of law, and scientific advancements demonstrate that Roe should by no means be considered settled law. Roe is an abomination in our country's history, and it is time for it to be overturned and for the horrendous practice of legalized abortion to end. The Supreme Court's flawed ruling on abortion goes against broad public support to limit abortion, and it makes America an outlier in extreme abortion laws internationally. To learn more about the legal, historical, and cultural reasons to overturn Roe v. Wade, go to frc.org/Roe. That's frc.org/Roe.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In a victory for female athletes, Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi signed legislation on Thursday banning transgendered boys from competing in women's sports. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about it is the author of the bill, Mississippi State Senator Angela Hill.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be back, Tony.
Congratulations. I'm sure you're happy today to see this signed into law.
Absolutely. I was so happy for the governor to sign this bill into law and for me to be joined by so many colleagues in the legislature standing there and applauding the governor for signing this bill. This is just a common sense bill. It is a shame that we even have to have a piece of legislation that says that biological males that identify as females cannot come in and take over women's sports. I never thought I would be here in the day that we had to have a statute to declare the differences between males and females in female sports.
Now, I have to say, Senator Hill, you made this look pretty easy, getting this bill through the legislature, but you did run into some opposition. Where was that from?
Well, you know, unfortunately, sometimes people who know that things are the right thing to do sometimes still get cold feet and sometimes have to be nudged across the finish line. So, you know, I had to fight for this bill. Just don't take it for granted that if you're in a Republican-controlled body that you're going to get this legislation through, because there's lots of interest out there pushing back. But, you know, in the end, it came together. Everybody worked together. We got the bill passed, and that's what truly matters. And now South Dakota's passed the bill. Governor Noem says she's going to sign this bill. Other states are trying to get this legislation out. And I'm just happy that Mississippi has gotten this behind us and that now we can focus on, you know, maybe helping colleagues in other states get this through their state legislatures.
You know, that's a good point, Senator, that, you know, there's other things to do now to work on. But the issue is we have to deal with these issues because the left is pushing them on us. Like you said, this shouldn't be necessary that we have to protect girls' sports. But in fact, it is because of the agenda they're pushing.
I agree with you. And you know, the right has to learn that the left fights, and when they get in charge, they roll like a steamroller. And so we're going to have to be a unified front on the right, and we're going to have to push as hard as we can back, because honestly, I think that they have, you know, tipped their pendulum too far and gone really too far with this, because I think the polling in Mississippi is reflective of what most people think across the United States, that, you know, biological males don't belong in female sports, whether they no matter how they identify, that women's rights matter. We created women's sports for women to be able to compete against other women fairly. And we have to protect that now. I mean, you know, just because somebody says it's so doesn't mean it's so that a biological male can turn into a female, because they're always going to be a biological male and have these inherent differences between male and female that give them an unfair advantage when it comes to strength, agility, stamina, all these things that we know the differences are between brothers and sisters, you know, men and women. You know, we're here to declare that there are male and female. And, you know, if we have to put that down in a state statute, that's what we're going to do. Unfortunately, that's where we're at in this country. And we're just going to have to stand up and say women have rights. And you cannot say that you're a supporter of women with a straight face and believe that biological males should be able to come and take over female sports.
Yeah, and I think it's very telling, Senator, that you see very few women wanting to do men's sports. It is the other way around, because there is an advantage for biological men to enter into women's sports.
And if you look at some of these cases across the country, these people, these males that decided that they wanted to come over and participate in female sports, they couldn't do much on the male sports team. But once they started in coming over on the female team, then they started winning. So that's, you know, unfortunately, that's what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Senator, I appreciate you, and I know our listeners do, for standing up for common sense, because we're living in a time when common sense, quite frankly, is uncommon.
Yeah, well, it's more common than you think. The media wants you to think it's not common, but in Mississippi, 79% of the people polled supported this law. And I think that you'll find in most states that the majority of people support protecting female sports.
Yeah, you are right. Recent polling shows that to be the case, even among young people. Young people, very supportive of women's
sports. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you being with us.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, encouraging you to pray for our nation. I want to thank you for being with us, and I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.